On the show today, abandoned places, or in this case, abandoned stuff.
So imagine a lab looking like a corridor of a hospital. So very sterile, very white. And amongst that corridor, there's going to be lots of freezer systems.
This is Gary Cooper. In 2008, Gary was at Northwestern University working in a research lab on a drug discovery program. And to do that work, Gary and his colleagues filled the banks and rows of freezers with all kinds of supplies.
We would say have antibodies, probes that attach or recognize proteins, all the way to buffer systems, thousands of those things.
And because you can't just buy a single antibody or a few enzymes, they bought them in bulk.
And then you so-called aliquot it out. So you kind of make separate vials of that. And then you stick those aliquots in a freezer.
Aliquot is allocate in lab speak, divided up for different uses. And while some of the enzymes and proteins would get used, others would be put into storage and forgotten about.
You leave the lab and no one knows that they're there. They're just these tubes. What are these tubes? They're just marked alpha. No one even knows what these tubes are. And meanwhile, literally someone, probably on your same floor, is trying to buy that same aliquot or trying to get an aliquot or trying to get a whole bottle of that antibody or that restriction enzyme or that buffer system. And so they're buying that new where literally the refrigerator across the hallway has what they're looking for. But because they don't know it's there, you have this double waste problem.
This really bothered Gary. Not only was all this waste, well, wasteful, it was expensive.
Meanwhile, I knew other students who were in labs that were smaller and less resourced and had less funding. And they would sometimes be looking for the things that we weren't even using or, in fact, that we were going to throw away. And so I thought that was absurd.
So one day,
I literally just got a cart, put things that we weren't using on the cart. I would then push the cart around the floor.
Not antibodies in the cart, though.
Well, actually, they were in the cart. So I would put them in dry ice. And I would say, hey, do you need an aliquot of, you know, whatever it is? And let me tell you, people would say, oh, my gosh, yes, we were about to buy. Oh, this is so thankful. Sometimes they would say things like, what can I give you? And when they said that, it made me think, oh, there's something more than sharing here, right? There's potentially a whole system of exchange, of sharing, of exchange of value, I'd say, that could be had if this was more than a cart, right? We can't scale one person at a university on one floor. That's not a global scaling solution.
Tell me about, as you started to research on a broader scale, what the situation was in terms of wasted equipment or materials or products. Lay it out for us, big picture. What did you find?
Yeah, so something like 45% of all global greenhouse gas emissions is because of what we call a linear economy. So that's an economy where we take things out of the ground, we make something with them, and then when we're done with them, we throw them away. Mm-hmm. Right. If we did all the things that have to do with energy and gridding and food, there's still a 45% hole in closing the gap to net zero. And the only way we can get there is by structuring this thing called a circular economy, where the item that you're using doesn't start from new products. When you make products, you design them with the end of life and reuse in mind.
So this is when you take a big leap, Gary. You decide to leave neuroscience and start a company.
That's right. I knew exactly the pain points that someone would say if you said them to reuse something. On the other hand, I knew the benefits. And so some ways I was our customer and user number one. I knew exactly how the system should work in the working world and for it to have global import and scale. And so that's kind of how we started Reaply.
Reaply, the company I founded and run, helps organizations identify and catalog the things they own, reuse them internally when they can, and distribute them to other organizations when they cannot. It's like a high-tech, scaled-up version of me with the pushcart at Northwestern, but with hundreds of organizations, from technology to manufacturing leaders, and millions of items available for sale and donation, all cataloged on a digital platform stretching across partners in a local area, a city or state, creating connected networks of reuse. Reaply helps organizations reuse things like building materials and IT and industrial equipment and furniture.
Gary imagined a sort of Craigslist for business that could also keep track of where all the objects are.
We need to know where every chair is. We need to know where every desk is. We need to know where every door is. Because if we know where those things are before they're, quote, lost, we can plan for their next life.
This marketplace would show when and where a chair or desk or door is available, and then get the item from A to B.
Whether they be a nonprofit next to you, whether it be your colleague and then on the floor beside you, I see that door, I see that couch, I see those chairs. I want them when they're available.
Let's take a look at how it works for furniture. An investment bank in New York City had about 2,000 premium office chairs that they no longer could use. When they hired us, we sent in a team to inventory that furniture on that floor. When it was determined that these items could no longer be useful internally, a notification was sent out through our platform to all of our partners, hundreds of them. I'm happy to report that all of these chairs found new homes in a local university, a community housing organization, and a local refurbishment company. In total, about 68,000 pounds of potential waste was diverted from landfill, and about $100,000 of value was recaptured and shared with these organizations. Not to mention the carbon savings. Making one of these office chairs, which weighs about 55 pounds, releases 245 pounds of carbon emissions into the atmosphere.
Gary, I am having a hard time envisioning 2,000 chairs. What would have happened if this company, this bank, didn't have a service like yours to find new homes for all of them?
Generally speaking, what they do with the old stuff is they liquidate it or they dispose of it. And the dispose word is just AKA for landfill or throw it away. Mm-hmm. When they liquidate it, I can tell you about 95% of the time, 5% of that stuff is resold, 95% of it is also disposed into a landfill.
So somebody comes along and buys the 1,000 chairs and is like, I'll take care of this for you.
Exactly.
And maybe they make a little bit of money.
They're going to make a little bit of money, and then they're not going to hold inventory that they can't sell in their warehouses. So they're going to get rid of it as soon as possible. Let me tell you a different, more circular way of doing that versus the linear way we just described. We send these 1,000 chairs to a remanufacturer who reupholsters them, who makes them look a little bit more befitting to maybe the designer's wishes, who's designing your new space. And then they send those chairs back to you. Mm-hmm. You've only paid for the updating of them, the remanufacturing of them, and the reshipment. But you're not having the carbon emissions that comes from the manufacturing of those items. So the whole part of the circular economy from a carbon emissions perspective is trying to reduce net new manufacturing. That's where the largest share of carbon emissions happens in the world, is through manufacturing. And so when you think on both the manufacturing side and on the disposition side, circularity and reuse is just such a better answer, even at the level of chairs.
So we know how to create a circular economy with a microscope on a pushcart like me at Northwestern. And we know how to do so inside and outside of a building with either its building materials or things like IT infrastructure on a digital platform like Reaply. But how do we get to the scale of a city and why? Well, cities occupy about 3% of global land mass, but house over 50% of the global population, which commands over 75% of all global resources. Cities are perfect, tractable fronts for us to drive down greenhouse gas emissions and create a lot of jobs by building local circular economies. Now, to transition any city's linear economy to a circular one, we're going to, at the very least, have to do three things. First, we have to build a digital infrastructure to connect every citizen and every company to everything in their city. Next, we're going to have to build the operational infrastructure to make reuse and recycling and remanufacturing easy and universally acceptable. Next, we're going to have to incentivize every person and business to participate in their local circular economy.
So you are actually working with the city of San Francisco right now on a pilot project.
Absolutely. So in San Francisco, we have launched, and it's exactly all of these things are operating in San Francisco. So we have the digital infrastructure. We have operational capacity and infrastructure that's provided by the city and a few partners. We have about 200 different businesses on the platform. And San Francisco has passed a set of ordinances that either require or strongly encourage people to participate in their local reuse platform. If we can get 1,000 cities to circularity by 2040, we can reduce global greenhouse gas emissions by 63% and get us back on track for meeting the 1.5 target set out in the Paris Accords. And if we can't do that, it's going to be maybe impossible.
I'm guessing that the only person listening to this who might think that this is a bad idea is the chair manufacturer who's like, well, wait a second. What about my business?
Yeah, and I have good news for them. They should be participating too. They have all the upside. So, for instance, your iPhone. Somewhere between 50 and 60% of the materials in your iPhone are reharvested by Apple. I'm able to upcycle materials that were in that old phone into a new phone. So that my cost for new manufacturing go way down. If you think about the re-commerce market is growing about 16 times faster than the global apparel market. If you look at companies like Patagonia and REI comparatively to their market counterparts, they have operationalized circularity. They've operationalized these environmental principles, and they're honestly crushing their competition in the market. It's a better system. It's a better system for a manufacturer to lease or to rent something as a service than to sell it. They make way more money. They control their reverse supply chain. I was just talking about the iPhone scenario. And it's just more predictable business. The problem, I would say, having friends in the manufacturing world, is how do we go from where we are to there? How do we go from what we're doing today to a new system? And I think there's some good questions and good people working on those answers.
Gary, this was so exciting. And it's making me, you know, I live in Brooklyn where there's like a stoop economy, but it just is one way, you know, where you clean it out, you put it out, and it's disappeared by the next day. And also
I love that.
And my neighbor who is the textile recycling guy, everybody knows it's easier to take your textiles and dump it at the farmer's market on Sunday than put it in your garbage.
That's right.
Oh, and there's an opportunity because he has turned it into his livelihood. Like, that, this is what he does.
Yeah, I mean, just on that front, I think compared to landfill and incineration, in one of these circular cities, it can create millions actually of green jobs. I think 6x more recycling jobs than current and 50x more reuse jobs because of what you're just saying. Because people will start remanufacturing businesses. They will start repair businesses. They will start what I'll call reverse Uber businesses, right? I got to take this item to you. So that's going to create these local jobs that don't need college education. In some cases, don't even need apprenticeship. They just need someone to care and someone to say, I'm going to be their local remanufacturer of chairs or furniture or desk or whatever it is. These assets do not belong to landfill. They don't deserve them. When we say these are assets, their value, then the question is, well, what do we do with them? How can we make money off of them? And the circular economy has the answer.
Gary Cooper is the CEO and co-founder of Reaply. You can find his full talk at TED.com. On the show today, Abandoned Places. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. We'll be right back.